Welcome to Echo This, where we are empowering conversations of hope and opportunity. I'm your moderator, Lisa Jones. And today, our episode is called Laughcraft, Forging Empowerment Through Humor. I encourage all of you to join us while we dive into the world where laughter meets empowerment, crafting hope and opportunity with every chuckle. In Laughcraft, we transform everyday challenges into playful adventures. We believe that a good laugh isn't just fun. It's a spark of empowerment and a beacon of hope. So get ready to laugh, get ready to learn, and be inspired. Let's forge empowerment through humor together. It is now my pleasure to introduce our Echo members. I want to start with Amy. Please introduce yourself, Amy.
Hi, I'm Amy Weishaus, and I am a lifelong learner and educator. And my platform is that every single one of us has the responsibility and the joy and the privilege to create joy. And that's my
Well,
platform.
thank you, Amy. Welcome, Amy. And how about you, Debbie?
Hi, I'm Debbie Wimberly. I am a speaker and effective cannabis coach and educator. And I actually am on a mission to make sure that everybody is aware that they are born with an endocannabinoid system and the role that it plays in maintaining and improving your quality of health and life.
Thank you. Well, welcome, Debbie. And I am Lisa Jones, a speaker, consultant, and author that leverages the power of humor, gamification, and play as fuel to enhance collaboration, increase engagement, and maximize productivity. Just to let you know, if this is your first time here, each of our episodes features several segments. Our first segment is Echoing the Hope. And today, what we're going to do is discuss our Echoing the Hope question. And our question today is, in a world where challenges often seem insurmountable, how can we be transformative with the power of humor? And how can this serve as a tool for empowerment and resilience as well? So, if you also want to, this is kind of a two-part question. If you wanted to discuss how laughter not only provides relief in the face of adversity, but also acts as a catalyst for personal and collective empowerment. So, I will start with Amy for this question.
Well, I was thinking about how when we wake up in the morning, we want to start the day with some kind of empowerment to make us feel really good. And some people meditate, some people have a morning ritual of exercise. And it dawned on me, exploring this topic of laughter, that laughter is sort of a muscle that we can develop. And that we can create from the moment we wake up in the morning. It's a decision we make that, many people say, I choose to be happy. Well, my new mantra is, I choose to laugh. So I want to suggest to all of us, in the face of resilience, adversity, or anything we face in a day when it's almost too difficult to get out of bed and we want to hit that snooze alarm still one more time. I would say just look for the laughter. Look for it. One thing I found all over the internet was funny t-shirts. Now, sometimes we see them on people and we know the people and we know that they express something about their character or their interests that could spark a conversation. It could be, I'm only talking to my dog today. What does that tell you? Or somebody could put out a warning. You know that little thing inside your head that keeps you from saying things you shouldn't? Yeah, I don't have one of those. And that on a t-shirt, it's a lot to read, but it really causes you to think as you're approaching this person. I saw another one, raising my husband is exhausting. And I can relate to this one. The t-shirt says, when I'm old, they're never going to say, what a sweet old lady. They're going to say, what on earth is she up to now? So I thought, hey, if I'm open to what people are wearing, what people are saying, how they look, even I'm aware more now of license plates, and many of them are very humorous. And what about when you go to the marina on a weekend, the names of the boats are really funny. Miller High Life, on somebody's yacht. So we can see it everywhere. Laughter is everywhere. And I challenge you, go back to bed and get up again and find it today because it's there for everyone to tap.
Yes, yes, that's great points, Amy, because once you're more aware of it and you start practicing it and you make it part of your daily ritual per se, you get up and you're open your eyes to it, you start seeing more and more. And I love those t-shirts. Those t-shirts are a great conversation starter. Anybody that's wearing a t-shirt that's humorous, I just have to go up and say something to them. So yeah. Anyway, thank you. How about you, Debbie?
Well, humor serves as a powerful coping mechanism in the face of adversity by offering physiological and psychological benefits. And when I think about this, I think about the person that's struggling with a serious health condition or even maybe a serious event that's happened in their life. And finding the way to cope with that sometimes turns into laughter. And maybe that laughter sometimes is a good thing, sometimes it's not, but it can be a nervous laughter. But it allows you to engage with someone else, and then they can find that funny, and you'll end up finding that maybe if it wasn't funny in that moment, that years later it becomes very funny. And this is something that I've lived with through my challenges of health, and that there are things that when they happen in the moment, I don't find too funny, and other people are trying to make them find them funny for me. And then the next thing I know, I'm actually years later saying, do you remember that time when? So, you know, laughter doesn't just exist in that one moment. Laughter can last for a long time. So it's a powerful coping mechanism at the time something's happening, and then it gives you the ability to come back to it and realize the value that you learn from that. So I think it's really important.
Yeah, that's such a great point. And what you were saying kind of goes into my thoughts about this question too, and it really struck a chord and reminded me of during my brain surgery. What happened was the doctors learned about my love for games, and when I was nearly on the table, I was having this brain bleed, or apparently I wasn't. They told me this after the fact, but they made a game out of how quickly they could cauterize the bleeding and save my life. And this playful approach not only eased the tension, but it likely improved their performance too. Because if you think about any time people get competitive with the games and they start playing, like it kind of helps your performance, your creativity, all that kind of stuff. So really what happens is the humor provided relief, and it's breaking that cycle of stress and fear. And then that laughter is releasing the endorphins, and that promotes the well-being. And of course, it can temporarily relieve pain. I mean, there's all kinds of research about it, but it helps us reframe problems. It does reduce our perceived threat, and it does make it more manageable. And then therefore that whole thing with fostering resilience starts to kick in. So I think that all those kind of things collectively, really, if you think about it, humor strengthens connections and it builds support networks. So if you think about it like that, that's kind of how we kind of talk about sharing laughter. It creates bonds, and then it really unites people and inspires groups to tackle challenges that they may have with renewed creativity. And as we were talking and discussing about adversity, when we embrace that laughter, that's really when we empower ourselves and others to face challenges with courage and resilience. And then that's turning the obstacles into opportunities for growth and connections. So thank you, ladies, for that. And now we will move into our second segment, and that's called Echoing the Opportunity, because with anything, we're talking about hope, and now we're moving on to opportunity. But I want to discuss how humor can bridge cultural and personal divides. How can it foster a more inclusive and understanding society? So I will go back to Amy for her thoughts on this.
Well, it's interesting because normally I consider culture to be different nations, different ethnic groups, and so on. But in pursuing the answer to this question, I thought we have certain cultures now that are so, well, they've always been predominant, but I think they're more noticeable now than ever. And those are the cultural divides between generations. I have a culture that's much different than my son, and my friends' grandchildren's have a culture much different than theirs and the one they grew up in. So we even label the cultures. I don't know, are we on Gen X now or Z? Or I don't even remember which one I was, other than the baby boomers, and that seemed to be a big, collective category. But we also name our divisions of our decades and our lifestyles and so on. And I was captivated on the internet by a woman named Susan Rice, who is in her 70s, and she's a stand-up comic. And she is certainly bridging the gap between understanding the elderly. And she had me in stitches. She does have something called Hints from an Old Broad. And there's a segment she does where she's in the doctor's office, and it's maybe 5 minutes, 6 minutes, but it's really funny. And everyone can identify with it, how she's put in a back room all the way at the end of the office suite, and she's handed a People magazine, and they think she's just going to sit there. And, she's looking and she says, "Harry Styles, who the heck is he? I don't care who he is." And one thing leads to another. And then the next thing you know, she's telling you about how what she's taken, the tape that she's pocketed and the gowns that she's stolen. And then she gets a little risque when she says how she's going to use that gown when the solicitors come to her door. And anyway, she's very, very funny. And it made me realize that culture, it could be the difference between our children, Lisa's 6-year-old and her and her husband. There's a different culture right there. So laughter can definitely bridge the gap. And I really felt that, comedy, like Debbie said, comedy has healing properties. Laughter causes us to heal. And we've all seen examples in the media of all different people from different ethnic groups, the Chris Rocks, look at the very famous popular movie, My Big Fat Greek Wedding. When I say that, people smile. And what are there, three versions of it now? Okay, so there's so many examples, and all we have to do is tune into them and realize that we're bridging gaps and we're resilient and we're forming community when especially those who have that extra sharp perception can take the ordinary and make it hysterically funny.
And that's what it sounds like. I'm going to definitely have to check out the comedian. That sounds very funny.
Oh, I want to add one quick thing. She's from Portland, Oregon. And in relation to Lisa's last point about how it can bring people together, during the pandemic, when comedians couldn't go in person and have an in-person gig, she formed the first comedy festival outdoors to keep people laughing and to help the people who didn't have employment at that time. And she started an amazing community outreach based on laughter. And think of all the ramifications that had.
Yeah, we also started Zoom comedy, so that was also funny in itself with what things people would do, which is a whole nother episode for us. People do on the Zoom camera. You'd be shocked by some of the things. Like at one point, some guy was just took his shirt off and just started putting lotion on, but he kept his camera on. Things that we may not necessarily want to see. Anyway, thank you, Amy, for that. How about you, Debbie?
Well, I think that this is a really interesting concept that we're talking about here and how we can bridge cultural and personal differences with comedy. And I think that working in the medical industry and dealing with chronic health conditions, finding humor in that atmosphere is sometimes really hard. And so I found that through my own experiences, when you draw attention to yourself in a funny way, people will engage with you and ask questions and get curious. And sometimes they ask you the silliest questions of all. But all of a sudden, it doesn't matter that there's something really wrong with you or there's something happening with you. And I can give two examples of this. I was wearing a mask long before the pandemic and before anybody else was wearing a mask because I have serious lung conditions and I have a non-existent immune system, so I can't fight off anything. And so I got tired of going in, and I realized when I would smile at someone, no one could see it. And so I was like, okay, this is crazy. I keep smiling at everybody that walks by and nobody's noticing it. So I came home and I pulled out my mask and I pulled out magic markers and I started drawing a smile on my mask. And it was really interesting. I was going into, because I had an infection in my leg, and I was going to the wound care center, and I went in with my mask on one day, and I don't know if it got a little bit wet or something, and all of a sudden I had this big red smile and it started to drool a little bit, and this nurse came rushing up to me, "Oh my God, you're bleeding, what's happening to you?" And it was a mask. It wasn't even me. So it was really funny that, you know, just in that he was doing his job and he came rushing to help me, and then we just both cracked up laughing. It was hilarious. So, you know, it bridged that, and it made it a more easy and calm situation for me going into a meeting for the first time and not even knowing what was about to happen with me. And so, you know, it's just kind of interesting how sometimes the silliest things that we can do can bridge that gap with other people. And regardless, health doesn't matter what race you are, what country you're born from, anything. It helps, it impacts all of us. And learning to use humor when we're going through those times is really relief. And it's very well needed and accepted when you're the person that's struggling with a health condition. And just one other quick note, when I was, I had ruptured a tendon in my leg and I had to wear this brace on my leg, and it was just a white, ugly cast looking thing. It looked like an artificial limb. And so decided to get creative, and I went to the store and bought a whole bunch of duct tape, and I created an Alice in Wonderland boot, designed. And then I had a tennis shoe that matched it. And that I had to wear to go with it. So I actually took that and decorated that tennis shoe. And then everybody started wanting to order them. But it immediately started conversation. People wanted to know what it was. When it was white, no one would approach me. They just looked at me kind of funny, curious about what was on. But once I added that color and that curiosity to it, then everybody engaged. So it really is important that we use laughter. And we, even as sick people, can find a way to do that by drawing attention to ourselves. And there's lots of comedians out there that have disabilities or struggle with some condition, and they're using it to create laughter. I think it's really important.
Yes, I couldn't agree with you more. And I love your creative side with what you're doing with the mask. And I am curious though, like after that incident, did you change it to a pink? Because then it might not have had gotten the nursing staff so alarmed if it was like a pink lipstick for your pink smile. I don't know, just a thought. But you're right, humor does act as a universal language. It bridges cultural and personal divides, and it does foster inclusivity and understanding. And I'm in agreement with what you're both are saying, because I really think that laughter is like a magical bridge that connects people, and it connects people from all backgrounds, and it breaks down barriers and building trust. And talking about that further, if we talk about shared laughter, it highlights our common human experiences. It helps us to realize that we're not so different after all. Even though you may feel like you're different, we're really not so different after all. It creates common ground in the silliest places, as some of the examples that you mentioned. And it does foster respect and appreciation for others' unique perspectives. And Debbie's mask still making me laugh with the but really, when we see the world through a playful lens, we can become more open and accepting of our own and others' quirks. So what I would say to everyone listening to these stories from Amy and Debbie is, let's keep laughter flowing. Let's build bridges of understanding and inclusivity one playful moment at a time. And with that being said, I want to move into our third segment, and that is called Echoing the Laughter, which is appropriate for today, because our Echoing the Laughter question is, how does the universal appeal of laughter create a shared human experience? How does it break down barriers? And how does it foster a sense of community and connection among people from all walks of life? So I will start with Amy again for this one.
I love this question. Very good, very good. Yay!
It's as if Debbie put on her mask again.
I've just demonstrated my next segment. Okay, now, I belonged to a. Okay. Now, the point is, your body doesn't know the difference whether that was fake laughter or not. Ah, your body doesn't know the difference. A few years ago at my support group, a lady came as our speaker and she was going to talk about laughter yoga. And I thought, what the heck is that? Because you have to balance in yoga, so how can you be laughing? Well, it's really not yoga per se. What it has in common with yoga is breathing techniques, and focus. And the guru, the laughing guru who started this, is named Dr. Kataria, and he's a doctor from India. And he wrote a book, and he has a following in countries all over the world. All over the world with clubs, laughter yoga clubs. This is what it's called. He wrote a book called Laughter for No Reason. It's been translated into Italian, French, German, Farsi, Indonesian, and Korean, and English. Well, yeah, and English. And he finds that when he does this and trains people to do it, even pretend laughing, they just have these amazing, amazing transformative effects in their health, in their mental health, in their physical health, that are incredible. And he is on the internet, and there are some disciples of his, ordinary people, who just start laughing on screen with you. And it turns out it is truly contagious. And at the risk of doing that, of course, I thought, here I am, I'm going to make a fool out of myself, on this podcast. And I said, you know what the heck? I've got to try it and demonstrate it. And it worked. It obviously worked. And you weren't, we were faking it because, all right, the stimulus was me acting totally zany off the wall. Nobody expected me to do that. But I'm really entranced by this laughter yoga concept. And I found out that a typical session might begin with some exercises, breathing. And it may last 30 to 60 minutes or even maybe 2 hours. But they encant one of the articles mentioned that people got together and he was tutoring them in what to do. And then they all burst, this whole room of people, into uncontrollable laughter for 15 minutes straight. And you know how your cheeks can get and your stomach muscles can get with something like that. So, this is another thing. We all talk about hope, opportunity, resilience. It's all within us. And I think some of us could even look in the mirror and laugh and find something funny about a bad hair day or anything at all and create that laughter for ourselves. So that's my contribution on the universal appeal and this phenomenon. And I'd be curious to know if the two of you have heard of it, laughter yoga. Go check it out.
Yes, thank you, Amy, for that number one experiment. And the other thing is, I noticed when you were laughing, two things happened to me, and this was unexpected. So thank you for doing that. And the first thing that happened was, I'm like, what is she laughing at? Like, I wanted to know, I wanted to be a part of it. And then the second thing that happened was, as you kept continuing laughing, I just wanted to start laughing with you. So I think, like, as we see other people laughing, it's a bonding experience, and then people just start laughing too. After they figure out like why you're originally laughing, but you told us. And yes, I've heard of laughter yoga, and I do believe that there's also, and you can correct me if I'm wrong, because it sounds like you've done a little bit more research about it than I have, is it's you can get certified in it too as well. There's like classes and different things that you can take if for people that want to explore it further, and it does have healing purposes. So thank you for sharing that. How about you, Debbie? What are your thoughts? What happened
Well,
when Amy did her experiment?
I will say first, I've never heard of yoga laughter or laughter yoga. So yeah. But bottom line, I've never heard of it. But when Amy started laughing, I have to tell you, I was thinking, oh, Amy's always getting text and she's always looking down at her phone. And so immediately I thought she had got a text and she just broke out laughing. And so I was curious what was going on and realized I was laughing. So now this is the importance of what we're talking about here. Is that when you hear someone laugh, and especially when it comes from that deep belly like Amy was doing, you can't help but want to laugh. And this is a really important part when we're talking about health and life and living it and being is living it to the best that you can. So I want you to think about when you were a little kid, and that little kid still lives inside of you. And that kid is always willing to laugh. Have you ever met a kid that's not willing to laugh or do something to make you laugh? Kids love to cause laughter. And I think about the little kids that I used to work with when I worked in oncology. And, you know, kids as young as 2 years old that had leukemia. And those little kids would come in with a smile on their face and ready to laugh. And they made me laugh every day. And that is such a giving gift that I walk away with and can share. And those kids, that was back in the 70s, have left an impact on me to this day. So, you know, this is one of the healing parts of laughter and understanding that that laughter can last forever. It's not just for the moment. So I'll remember this incident with Amy right now, breaking out and laughing on this. And now making me think, should we just start everything we do with a laugh like that? I think that maybe that's what we should do. Because I think when we break that ice, it makes it easier for us to relax, especially when it's a stressful situation. Or maybe you're under the gun to get something done at work. It's really important that you can give yourself that time to laugh. And it does bridge gaps between people and bring you together.
Yes, yes. Well said, both of you. And that kind of, you kind of both prove that laughter is really like a magical glue that sticks us all together. Because if you imagine, to Amy's point, everyone on Earth suddenly bursting into giggles, no matter where they're from or what language they speak, it's an instant fun and connection as well. So if we picture this, we picture that you're in a room full of people from different cultures, different backgrounds, and let's even be crazy and say planets. Why not, right? Somebody cracks a joke and all of a sudden everyone laughs. Boom. Just like that. Barriers start to crumble. Laughter turns strangers into friends. And it's really like flipping a switch from awkward to awesome. Kind of what Amy showed us today. Laughter is our universal superpower. It doesn't care about your age, your job, where you live. And when we laugh, we're all just humans sharing a moment of joy. That's it. It's like a group hug for our souls, bringing us closer and making us feel like we belong. And I would go a step further and say, laughter is contagious in the best way, of course, because one chuckle leads to another and soon everyone's in on the fun. And it's really a shared human experience. It creates a sense of community. It reminds us that, hey, we're all part of one big, happy, giggling family, let's say. So a call to action for our audience. The next time you hear a joke or see something funny, let the laughter fly. It's your secret weapon for breaking down barriers and building a world full of joy and connection. And with that, I want to move into our fourth segment. And this one's my favorite, Echoing the Enigma. And our Echoing the Enigma question today is, what ways does humor navigate the delicate balance between revealing truths and preserving the mystery of the human experience, thereby enriching our understanding of both the obvious and the obscure? Amy, what are your thoughts on this? Are you going to start laughing?
I'm going to ask you to go to Debbie first on this and come back to me because I'm still recovering.
All right. Amy's recovering from the enigma of her laughter. So we will go to Debbie. Debbie, what are your thoughts?
Well, I'm going to die laughing. Just letting you know. And that's genuine. Humor is like finding balance is like walking a tightrope. And there's been a couple of uncomfortable situations that I have been in with death. That is like, how can you find humor in those moments? And the best way you can find humor is to allow yourself to laugh, is to allow yourself to relax and find that laughter. And you're looking for connection, but you're also looking for relief. And so there's this up, the last time I was in the hospital in 2016, and my sister was called in because they didn't think I was going to make it. And my sister has this, now, of course, I was totally out of it and didn't know what was going on for a period, but they actually, when I finally could breathe for myself and think for myself. When I saw my sister, I can laugh. She's 5 years older than me, and it doesn't matter when she enters the room. We don't live close together, where she lives in Washington and I live in Arizona. And so, but when she enters the room, I laugh. And my husband even says, when you and your sister are together, you just laugh all the time. And it's like, I know. So, well, this is the funny part. I'm in the hospital and we're laughing and we're cutting up. And now it's still serious. Don't get me wrong. But it was the relief I needed to recover. And the doctors would come in and the nurses would come in and they'd say, you've got to quiet down. You can't be doing this. She's really sick. She doesn't need to be laughing like this. She's struggling to breathe. She's low on oxygen. And it's like, I don't know how to stop this, and I don't want to stop this, because this is making me feel better than just sitting here grasping for air and thinking that I might die. And so we kept on, and the doctors and nurses would come in and say, you're causing too much ruckus. And it's like, okay, we'll keep the door shut. And then I realized they can't throw me out. So, you know, I'm staying with what I'm doing. And so I was in the hospital for well over weeks, but it was really, truly amazing, because I believe that laughter is what pulled me through. Yes, I had determination and will. And so, you know, it's just being born and raised with her, I guess, that we just know each other's funny side, and it makes it really important. So having that connection with someone that you really can find that laughter with can be really important in these situations. And even as dark as they are, you can turn them into something. And now we still talk about that event and how great it was. As bad as it seemed at the time, we have something to live on with that memory.
Yes, and such a powerful story. And you were so blessed to have her and somebody in your life that can do that for you. And it was laughter in the nick of time, it sounds like. Thank
absolutely.
How about you, Amy? Are you ready for...
Yeah, I needed a minute to catch my breath and shift gears. We have to start really teaching what is appropriate humor, what is appropriate laughter. Mm-hmm. And a child's humor can reveal a lot about the child's mental health and physical mm-hmm. well-being, because it could state whether the child is depressed or not. And there are different types of humor. There are some that are adaptive, which help you be popular and increase your comfort and confidence. And there are types that are maladaptive that cause harm and unhappiness and unfortunately tragedy in our society. I love the little segments all the time about babies laughing. I mean, that's laughter yoga. You could just, they're so infectious and contagious. You can just rip with these little babies laughing. They're hysterical. And what about America's Funniest Videos? A lot of them are about the antics of pets. And we look at what the pets are doing and we're hysterical. But there's appropriate humor and there's the dark side. And that's where we have a grave responsibility right now to address that.
Yeah, definitely. Thank you for sharing that, Amy. And I think, and I'm going to take it in a slightly different way, because how I was thinking of this question is in comparison to, if you look at humor, because you know I love the analogies, but we think of humor like a cheeky magician revealing truths while keeping some mystery alive. And if you listen to a stand-up comic, a lot of times they start, like, that's what we're on the edge of our seats waiting to hear what they're going to say next, what they reveal to us next, because it's mysterious at the same time. And if you picture that comedian making you laugh and you think, I never thought of it that way before, it's kind of like a playful detective, and they're highlighting life's quirks and absurdities, but they show us our true selves, but in a funhouse mirror type of way, right? So if we think about how humor also keeps some secrets, because it preserves life's mysteries and it keeps us curious, and Debbie had mentioned curious several times before, but it keeps that curiosity. And it's like a funny friend who shares just enough to keep us guessing, when you're leaning in and you're saying, tell me more. And that balance keeps our minds engaged and our curiosity alive, which is very important. So if we think of humor as a tour guide and we're on life's roller coaster, it points out obvious sights with a wink and a speeding through tunnels kind of obscure way. But we gain from this a richer understanding of the world. And we feel enlightened and intrigued at the same time. And for me, this question is, how can we perfectly balance humor in that aha moments with the, mysteries because it makes life endlessly fascinating. So if you think about it like that, that's another perspective as well. And then I want to move into our fifth and final segment. And that is the most important one because it's echoing the transformation. How can we then reflect on a moment where humor significantly influenced your professional growth or professional development? And thinking about that, how did that laughter then help you confront and overcome a challenge or a limitation? And the second part is, what did this experience teach you about the transformative power of humor? So here where I'm really looking for from Amy and Debbie is to share a story. So Amy, are you ready or do you want me to go to Debbie?
I'm ready.
Okay, go ahead.
No, I'm ready. I have a grip on this one. I have to hearken back to many decades of joy in the high school English classroom. And I think professionally, what one thing I learned in my development was, for the sake of survival in, you know, a career which, like social work and nursing, you know, can be termed a burnout career sometimes in teaching, depending on, you know, so many different variables, I needed to learn how to make every day fun. And that transformation of the, you know, the faces like, oh, the, you know, entertain me, edutain me. It's fortunate I didn't have the competition of cell phones and social media at the time I was teaching. I had video games and other things, but it wasn't as deeply distractive as it is today, I feel. And of course, kids are not allowed to have their phones in class, I'm sure. But I'll give you an example. When it came to studying Romeo and Juliet, what could be more deadly than Shakespearean humor? Yeah, they can't even understand the humor because they don't understand the Elizabethan English. So I said, well, we're going to act out. We're going to act out some scenes. So in Shakespeare's day, there were no actresses. It's considered an inappropriate, degrading career for women. So the men had to play the women's roles. So you could just imagine my ninth graders, as some of them played makeup artists and they were dolling up the guys with their wigs as they were getting ready to play Juliet and the nurse. And Romeo and Juliet was never quite like that before. So we had a lot of laughs. The students learned a lot about the culture and the words. And then I had to sometimes delicately interpret to them what some of the innuendos and the bawdy humor of Shakespeare was, because he was the bard of the masses and it was popular entertainment and people were picnicking and throwing food and, you know, they were laughing at the bawdiness of his humor. So, for example, I would have to delicately explain that breaking their maiden heads was an allusion to losing virginity. So imagine, here I am in a very conservative community. And there was one girl, I'll never forget, I adored her. Megan always used to keep a journal and she would write down, Weiss House, demerit, if I did or said something. And this was like an ongoing comedy act in this class. She'd say, Weiss House, no, you did it again. And she'd call me on things that I'd say, especially with Shakespeare's bawdiness. And then I said one thing one day, trying to make it as clean as possible. And she said, oh, Weiss House, you're a pervert. And she says that, in the, you know, to the whole class. So Romeo and Juliet, one of the most daunting things to teach, it taught me professionally, if I didn't come and approach it with some kind of humor, engagement is also the key. Involvement, engagement with the students. And if we can approach a Rotary Club meeting or a women's club outing or anything with that same mindset, we will get brilliant results. And, you know, on the flip side, they took the dialogue out from scenes of To Kill a Mockingbird. And while the rape trial of, you know, Tom Robinson is something that's endured for decades and still relevant and revived on Broadway as a show, you know, even the seriousness of that, the kids in working together and coming up with the dialogue, the costumes, and the fact that they're mirroring careers like a lawyer in the courtroom and everything. There's an element of joy about doing those things, even when they're somewhat serious. So that's where humor helped my career professionally, and where I, you know, on days like this, telling you about this, I really miss the classroom.
Well, thank you for sharing, Amy. You brought me back to my college Shakespeare class, where I myself used to make jokes about the assignments and crack myself up in class. And I would have loved to have been a fly on the wall to hear the different things that you said in that classroom. So thank you for sharing that. How about you, Debbie?
Oh, Amy, you cracked me up today. That's all I can tell you. I think that for me, working in the industry of technology, there's a lot of serious people. And this was back in the 70s. And I worked with a group of people that we all wanted to have fun. So we started by creating the GLOW group. And I don't know if you're familiar with GLOW, but it was a group of like kind of wrestlers type men and women that were out there just doing funny things. So we decided to become the GLOW group. And so we decided to all dress up. And so we decided to get into our crazy costumes. And it was really quite a sight to see. There was like 10 of us. And so we had probably equal men and women. And so we were kind of paired up. And so we would go into the office dressed like this and say, GLOW is here. And of course, now you have to realize I worked at a regional office. And so this was very stuffy office and everybody was always very serious. And so when we would walk in, they had really no idea what had hit them. And then they would start to laugh at us because here we all coming in with our short shorts on for the girls and bright colors, with our hair kind of tied up in big scarves. And then everybody was like, what are you guys doing? And it's like, we're trying to bring some comedy to the office because we believe it's a little too serious in here. And, you know, we broke the ice with that. And within that, I learned that we don't have to be so serious when we're talking about business. We don't have to be so serious in everything that we do. Once we break through that childhood of being just always curious and always willing to just say whatever hits your mind and not worry about what people are saying, we enter into a realm of, oh, we've got to get more serious. And do we really? Let's think about this. My work ethic is the same whether I'm straight or I'm serious or I'm laughing. And so why shouldn't we be laughing? So I personally learned that laughter serves me very well, and it serves anybody that works around me or with me or for me. Because when I allow people to bring that laughter in, then they can relax. And I guarantee you the workforce is a much better, happier place. And then personally, I've taken it with me into my health issues and learning that laughter is what serves me here. Because that piece of me is still there. It never dies. I think once you have laughter, I don't think it ever ends. And I haven't yet met anyone that doesn't have laughter.
Well, thank you. I just learned something that I didn't know about you, Debbie, which I didn't think it was possible, but you keep surprising me, and that's good for laughter as soon as you start. Now I have that imagery of you going in and being one of the GLOW girls, so thanks for that.
I'll have to share a picture sometime.
Yes, a picture. I'll put a picture on our Instagram or something.
Right.
But for me, this question kind of reminded me of one of my first big comedy gigs that I had. And I was on stage and I was performing and my mind goes blank. And I'm standing there, a deer in headlights with the light shining on my face. And the audience is just staring. Just staring out blank. Is this comedian going to say something? Like, is she good? And I all of a sudden blurt out, well, it looks like my brain's on vacation. Anyone seen it? And like, they start laughing, they crack up. But that unexpected humor saved me because it turned my brain freeze into a running joke. And by the end, I was on fire. It taught me that laughing isn't just a reaction. It's your superpower, right? So, and then eventually I got back on track. I remembered like my set and what I was going to say. But in that particular moment, humor helped me face my fear of failure head on. literally, right? Instead of crumbling, I embrace that moment and my brain farts and all, if you will. So when we laugh at our missteps, what happens is we turn those failures into fun. They're fun stepping stones, really. And it showed me that the magic of humor, it can transform challenges into opportunities. It can make us resilient. Laughter just doesn't feel good. It makes us bounce back stronger, but with a grin, right? Smiling after. So that's my short little story for that one. And then we do have a sixth segment now. It's called Echo This Now. And the question is, what in the last 7 days that you have heard is worth echoing? What in the last 7 days that you've heard is worth echoing? And I'm going to start with Debbie for this one.
Good.
Our glow girl. Go ahead.
That one's going to stump me a little bit, just to let you know. This has been a trying past week. So this is something that I have to dig a little deep on and not quite ready for, just letting you know. I think this last week, if nothing else, I think that we need to learn that life is short and that every day counts. And when I can provide laughter into that, it is important. And now I'll tell you something that made me laugh, which I may not make anybody else laugh, but it made me laugh. I was scrolling through Facebook and all of a sudden I saw a hand laying out with a piece of grass on it. And they said, the rarest piece of grass ever grown. Now I'm like, okay, how do we prove that? How do we know that? Is that really real? But that made me laugh because it's like, that's hilarious that someone would even put that out there. So, you know, but it also reminded me that we need to have our thinking caps on, that not everything that is put out in media is real or it's true. So are you willing to take that bait and go follow that grass that's the rarest piece of grass that's out there? Or are you willing to question it, which is where I live, and go find out why would anybody even say that? And it was actually just to grab your attention. So, you know, sometimes the funniest things that may strike you are things that just grab your attention and make you laugh. And then they send you out on a quest looking for the real answer for what it is.
Well, that's such a great example, because what happens was what they did powerfully and what they showed is they stopped the scroll. You were scrolling and made you stop. And that's really what we're trying to all do on social media. So thanks for pointing that out. I'm going to have to go check that one out. How about you, Amy?
Debbie's story reminds me of the phenomenon of the pet rock years ago. Yeah, yeah. Everybody had pet rocks. I mean, go figure that. That was really funny. Actually, there's a little bit of pathos in my example. A week ago, I was coming home from a funeral of a dear friend. And as we were leaving her development, I was thinking to my other friends in the car, oh, this is probably the last time we're exiting from this development, from this location. Mm-hmm. And with that, I saw the numbers 333 on the digital display on the clock. And 333 is a sequence. It's a powerful, magical number. And, you know, it has meaning of completion and freedom and joy. And I said, there she is. There's Jackie, who had a great sense of humor. And she's saying goodbye to us. So we're thinking about her. And the next thing I know, bam, I go right into the parking lever, the gate. I smashed right into the gate. And it hit my windshield and it's movable. It's jumping and bumping over. And the guy is yelling at me, didn't you see that gate? What's the matter with you? And I'm saying, I just came from a funeral. Don't you get nasty with me. And I'm telling you, it was a hysterical moment. It was a moment where Jackie was like pushing the envelope and saying, I'm with you, you know, don't despair. I don't want you, you know, sad and maudlin. And, you know, and then they say, we just fixed this gate. We just fixed it. And I'm thinking, oh, my God, because somebody told me that somebody in my development ran into a gate and it cost like $14,000. And that was like my worst nightmare, that I was going to be hit with a charge. Happy story. The gate was fine. I gave them my phone number. They never called me. They probably thought that poor woman, she must be blind or something. So I guess that happened. I didn't think there was going to be any humor in that day. But I have to tell you, that's a moment I will never forget. My car doesn't have a scratch, but it was a really, you didn't have to be there. I think you could get the juxtaposition of so many things. And, you know, I just realized right now that that was the funniest thing that happened last week. And I had a hard time, like Debbie, coming up with something. So many things are funny, but in a weird way.
Yeah, but the imagery of that now every time I go through a gate,
I really hit that gate. Like, how do you not see the gate? It's like, oh, forget it.
Well, sometimes I get it. I've been there almost gate incident, but yeah. Thank you for sharing, Amy. Mine, I had a similar thing. I was kind of like, which one is going to be the one that I talk about? And I think the one that rises to the surface is the other day my daughter, she was in this full tornado mode where she kind of just has the toys scattered from one end of the house to the other. And then of course we ask her, can you clean up your mess? And she immediately launches into her Oscar worthy tantrum that they do at 6. And she's like, why am I always the one who has to clean up? You and Daddy never do anything. She, complete with her dramatic flaring, then she starts crying like she wants your assistance. And then I'm laughing because it was just so funny because she just got off this drama production and then she comes home and she's doing this act out with her, like, clean up my toys. And then I say to her, well, we clean up our messes all the time. Who do you think picks up after your whirlwind of art projects and your snack explosions that you have? And then, of course, without missing a beat, she shouts back at me. She says, well, maybe if you didn't make such a mess, Mommy, I wouldn't have to clean up at all. Like, basically, like, I'm making a mess for her. And then what happened was my husband and I looked at each other. We turned on this song, the cleanup song that we call it. And then we ended up making a game out of it. And soon enough, like, what happened was we were all racing to see who can pick up the most toys the fastest. And then her tantrum turned into giggles. And then we all learned about teamwork and the importance of picking up after ourselves. And I'm hoping she still learns that lesson for the next time that this happens. Well, thank you so much, Amy and Debbie, for all your contributions on today's show. Well, we certainly laughed a lot. And before we go, I want to ask, is there any final takeaways?
Well, I have one statistic that I found a little sad, but I wanted to get it in before we end. And it's that research shows that babies laugh about 400 times a day, but adults on average laugh only about 15 times. So let's help our listeners get a little head start on today. And thank you for being here today.
Thank you all for sharing your wisdom today. And that wraps up this episode of Laughcraft, Forging Empowerment Through Humor. And we hope that you've had as much fun as we did and that you're leaving with a smile and a little more hope in your heart. And remember that laughter is your secret weapon, your superpower, and your key to turning challenges into opportunities. Until next time, keep laughing, keep growing, and keep forging a brighter future through the power of humor. We will see you soon. And for those of you listening, thank you for joining us today on Echo This. We hope you enjoyed it and walk away with something to echo. I know I did. Tune in next time. And until then, take care and keep echoing. And for those of you trying to get in touch with us, feel free to reach out at echotogether@gmail.com. And that's echo, the number 2, together, GETHER@gmail.com. And we're also on IG and LinkedIn as well. Please reach out. Thank you and have a great day. Keep echoing.
Echo, echo.
Echo, echo, echo.
Echo, echo.
Echo, echo, echo.
Echo, echo. Listen in for empowering conversations of hope and opportunity.